to co-sponsor the second annual Dance and Resist, Thursday, February 14th at 10 p.m. at Open Signal, Portland Community Media Center. Dance and Resist is Portland's only activist-led live television dance party. For Crying Out Meow Productions is proud to welcome back host and activist Kat Meow Garcia, joined this time by musician DJ Vicky for a night of resistance. Dance and Resist practices reclaiming community space through dance and revolutionary education. There will be a green screen photo booth and costumes are highly encouraged. Again, that's Dance and Resist too. Thursday, February 14th at 10 p.m. till midnight at Open Signal, 2766 Northeast MLK Jr. Boulevard, Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Northwest Film Center's Real Music Festival from January 18th through February 16th at the Witzel Auditorium in Portland. Films showing this year include Mr. Soul, The Ballad of Shirley Collins, Solo, The Evolution of the One Man Band, Gospel According to Al Green, and many more. Again, that's the Northwest Film Center's Real Music Festival from January 18th through February 16th at the Witzel Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio of the Working Class, by the Working Class, for the Working Class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with co-host Rachel Haynes. Hey, Rachel.
Hi, Stephen.
And we are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both of us are public school teachers and host every second Monday of the month, where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their unions and in their schools. And joining us today on the phone, we have two guests. We have Jen Conant in Chicago. Hey, Jen.
Hi, Stephen.
Hey, good to hear you. And also on the phone with us from Oakland, we have Quinn Ranahan. Quinn, hey.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. And did I butcher your last name or did I get it okay?
You got it all right.
Okay, good. Thanks. So thanks so much, both of you, for joining us. I hope this will be interesting to our listeners, having two teachers from different parts of the country. Jen, why don't you start? Talk about where and what you teach and a little bit about your background and experience.
Sure. I'm a high school math teacher in Chicago. And I teach Algebra 2, Pre-Calculus, and AP Calculus, and this is my seventh year in the classroom. And I teach at a charter school called CICS Northtown Academy.
Gotcha. And Quinn?
I am a seventh and eighth grade math teacher at Roots International Academy, which is a traditional public school in East Oakland. And we actually have currently been going through a fight for a school closure in the past month and a half. So that's where we're at right now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we have two math teachers on the phone, so look out. And Jen, maybe why don't you start again and just tell us a little bit about why you decided to become a teacher and what do you enjoy most about it now?
Sure. I volunteered at a middle school when I was a senior in college, and I really enjoyed working with students, but I found that there were a number of students whose needs weren't being met in the classroom, and I decided that I wanted to become an educator and help improve conditions in the classroom and help reach more students. And I love teaching. I love, teaching students about math, which I'm passionate about. I love working with students and seeing them grow and mature over time. And I love writing curriculum too. So it's a job that I really love and feel lucky to do every day.
Great. And what about you, Quinn?
Yeah, actually, also, it's a deep-seated, when I was in middle school, I volunteered in a classroom, in a special education classroom, and then I veered away from education until towards the end of college. Everyone told me not to go into education because it wasn't a stable, like, I wouldn't make enough money, and then I landed back in education anyways. And I love teaching. I mainly love teaching because I love the relationships I get to build with students.
Mm-hmm.
And I think eighth grade and middle school, more specifically, is really pivotal for students finding their self-worth and how understanding that everyone is smart in a different way, and like teaching kids how to internalize that and understand who they are as a learner.
Mm-hmm.
And that middle school is actually, I taught high school and middle school now, and it's a really pivotal age and time for students to develop. I love math because it's rarely the place where people feel confident, and so it's a really ideal place to allow students to grow their own self-esteem.
Great.
As a learner and as a human being.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you for that. So both of you are sounds like you're in there for the right reasons. So, Jen, what's it like teaching in Chicago? What are some of the hardships that educators are facing there? And if you want to be specific about charter school educators, that's fine too.
Okay. Well, I think a lot of the struggles that educators face here are similar to educators across the country. We know that public education has been chronically underfunded for a long time, and so a lot of our schools are under-resourced, whether they're traditional public schools or charter schools. And we work with students who often come from communities that have been under-resourced as well. You know, the majority of our students qualify for free and reduced lunch. A lot of our students are English language learners or have special needs. Most of them are first generation college students after they graduate. And so they need a lot of support and as much support and resources as we can give them in the classroom, but often we come up short. In charter schools in particular, the issue is that, state and public tax dollars go into the public school systems and then are given to charter management organizations, and mm-hmm. charter management organizations take a significant chunk of money for their management fees and administrative costs before the money goes into the schools. So the small amount of money that's going into education is reduced even more.
Gotcha. Okay.
And Quinn, what is it like teaching in Oakland? What are some of the issues that you're facing there?
Yeah, I love teaching in Oakland, and I love my students. They're beautiful, and the issues that we're facing right now are deeply rooted in a lot of different systems, but mainly, like was just stated, we're underfunded and under-resourced with really poor teacher retention, so we have a lot of new teachers coming into the profession with little support. Mm-hmm. We have little support with like behavioral health, and from physiological needs of lead in our water all the way up to inexperienced administration, or it can be range from all different things like not enough nurses, not enough counselors, definitely a living wage. Mm-hmm. We're in Oakland Unified, we're one of the lowest paid districts in the area as well.
Okay.
And it's a pricey place to live.
Yeah.
It is. And it's growing.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to go back to Jen for a minute here. So you're teaching in a charter school, but you're unionized as part of CTU. Can you talk a little bit about that? And how many other charter schools, if you know, are unionized with Chicago Teachers Union?
Mm-hmm. So my high school was one of the first charter schools to unionize in the city, and that was back in 2009. And since that time, we have grown to include 34 different unionized schools and 12 different charter networks. So about a quarter of the charter educators in the city are unionized. And originally, we had a union called Chicago Alliance of Teachers and Students and Staff. And about a year ago, we merged with the larger Chicago Teachers Union, which represents the rest of Chicago Public Schools educators. So that's been a really empowering merger and change to see that traditional public school teachers and charter teachers are actually fighting for the same things. We're fighting for our schools and for our students because we think they deserve better than is what's being provided to them right now.
And did you notice like a marked difference between your capabilities and your organizing structure when you were in your previous union to then going with CTU?
Definitely. The Chicago Teachers Union has been around for a long time, and so there are a lot of experienced staff members with a lot of knowledge about how to help you organize and work on a contract campaign. So we've been renegotiating our current contract since May, and I work with a wonderful group of teachers and counselors and paraprofessionals on the negotiating team, but it's been really critical to have the additional staff and expertise of the staff on the Chicago Teachers Union.
Great. And so you're in a group of charter schools currently on strike. Can you tell more about that and what your demands are?
Mm-hmm. So like I mentioned, we've been negotiating since May. We authorized a strike in November, but hope to avoid one. But even after meeting with management more than 30 times, we were unable to come to an agreement, and we went on strike on February 5th. So today marks our fifth day out of the classroom, unfortunately, but we think that we're fighting for what's right, and so we're willing to go on strike for that. So our demands, things that we've fought for in general, are smaller class sizes, more resources for special education, and ensuring that we're actually following special education laws in the support that we're providing to our students. We won language around having sanctuary schools, so working to protect our undocumented students. And we've been fighting for better counselor-to-student ratios and social worker-to-student ratios so that we can provide better mental health services for our students and college counseling and all the work that counselors can do. So there's a few of our key demands. Teacher compensation and paraprofessional compensation are also part of it.
Mm-hmm.
We have a high staff turnover rate, similar to the Oakland teachers, it sounds like, and that creates a lot of instability in our schools.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, it's the students who suffer when there's instability in our schools. And so we're fighting for better wage compensation because we think it'll improve our schools. And also because we should be compensated fairly for the work that we do.
Definitely.
Teachers in charter schools
think so?
Significantly less than teachers in our neighborhood schools.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, Quinn, now you're in Oakland, and you've been ramping up pressure on your district for a little while now. You voted to strike at some point in the future if an agreement wasn't reached. Take us through what's been happening up to this point, including, I believe there was sort of a wildcat strike. Well, I shouldn't say sort of. A wildcat strike that happened from some buildings. Yeah.
Yeah, over the last 20 months, we've been bargaining. Our union, OEA, has been bargaining with the district for, I'll just go through what we're bargaining for and then kind of walk you through what's been going on.
Mm-hmm.
We're bargaining for a living wage, which would look like a 12% increase over 4 years, and then a smaller class sizes, more student supports, and which would include like nurses, nurse ratio, counselor ratio, and reducing the sped caseload. And also stopping school closures from happening.
Mm-hmm.
So So we've been bargaining, and in December and January there have been there was a wildcat. The first one was in December, which was called the wildcat
okay.
strike, where a handful of high schools walked out and didn't go to school that day and sicked out in March to the district. And then another one happened in January where there were, I believe, 12 schools
wow.
of teachers sicked out and didn't go to work and marched to the district office and rallied there. So now we are actually finding out on Friday. We're getting our fact-finding reports on Friday. And we had a strike authorization, which is the highest we've ever had, of 95% of the people that voted yes, and 84% of our union members voted.
Okay.
Which is actually the highest we've had in history, which is great. And we're getting our fact-finding report on the 15th, this Friday, and then we will potentially be moving to a strike in the near future.
So I'm just curious about the wildcat strikes. What was kind of the reaction from the district, from the administration of those buildings? What was the fallout from that, if there was any?
Yeah, there was. They were pretty shocked, I think, from what was from it, and there were threats of docking pay, and there were threats that it was like an illegal. There were a lot of like principals what to say to teachers, and that legal labor action. And I do believe some teachers did get doc pay and some didn't. And then the second time, I actually went on the second one, and the same thing happened where they threatened us that we would get doc pay or whatever the disciplinary reaction would be.
Mm-hmm.
It was beautiful. Our site actually had maybe 60 kids at school that day, so over 200 kids didn't go to school on the day as well. And that was reflective. I don't know what the numbers were for all the sites, but there were a lot of student absences as well that were in solidarity with teachers.
And did they march with teachers to the district office as well?
There were some students, yes. Mainly high school students, because they have more capacity.
Yeah.
Mobilize. Great. Well, if you're just joining us, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I said it was mainly middle and high schools that were sticking out.
Mm-hmm. So no kindergartners marching with you?
No, not yet.
All right. Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio, and we have guests on the phone, Jen Connett from Chicago and Quinn Ranahan from Oakland, both teachers.
So let's go back to the idea of charter schools. So UTLA recently fought for a halt to charter school expansion. And Jen, you're working at a charter school. And Quinn, I know that Oakland is also concerned with charter expansion. So what are your thoughts about charter schools and both the concerns around privatization and also the efforts to unionize and create solidarity and common struggle?
Well, the Chicago's Teachers Union has actually called for an end to charter expansion as well, and our charter members support that. We know that there's a limited quantity of resources, and the more we open new charter schools, the less money and fewer resources go into the schools that are already open.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not advocating that our charter schools close, but we don't think that there should be new charter schools opened. We should work on improving the schools that we already have and bringing more resources to those schools. I think charter expansion and privatization, there are a lot of different reasons for it, but we know that one of the reasons is to, not have to work with teachers' unions. And I think in Chicago, we're seeing teachers fight back against that and say, we're going to stand up for our rights and for the rights of our students, whether we're working in a traditional school or a charter school. And I think that effort will actually grow over time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, currently OUSD has been declining enrollment, but there have been there are 16,000 students in charter schools, which has been really impactful for the public schools and the funding in public schools. And our district has been giving 40-year leases to charter schools, which is also impacting like where the property is going in our district and like who's making the money off of it. And one of my personal major concerns with privatization is who are the students that are going to be left behind through that process. And as I'm like facing a school closure right now, like it's a very like it's a large concern that the public schools are we're actually just losing students, and then we're losing schools that are growing and getting stronger. So that's one of like our major concerns here is that, and there's also not a lot of accountability for charter schools of how they're performing within our district.
That's true in Chicago as well. There isn't a whole lot of accountability. And we know that in general, charter schools perform on average about the same as traditional public schools. And that's one of the things that we're trying to change through our work in contract negotiations and in messaging with the public, that there needs to be more accountability for how our charter schools are run and how public tax dollars are being used. And in Chicago, it sounds like similarly to Oakland, we know in 2012 there was a push to close a lot of traditional public schools. There were 50 schools closed, and a bunch of new charter schools opened, but closing those neighborhood schools was devastating for a lot of communities. And students who had to change schools because their schools closed had decreases in their academic performance that they were never able to overcome. So there have been studies that have shown that those closings in Chicago were really detrimental to a lot of students and families and communities.
Some of the things we hear about charter schools when we're talking about them are they're selective in the students that they take in, and that they can just easily kick a student out if the student is being difficult. What do you see, Jen?
I think it depends a lot on the charter network, what their disciplinary policies are. There are networks in Chicago and I think around the country who have very strict discipline policies that essentially push students out of the schools if they're underperforming. That's not necessarily true in my network, but I know that that is true, for example, in the Noble Network in Chicago, which is the largest charter network in the city.
Okay.
As for choosing your students, students are chosen by lottery, but there is an effort to recruit students to the school to participate in the lottery. So I think that that could be part of where that criticism comes from. Chicago actually just changed to a model, though, where students get to choose where they go no matter where they live, more like New York City. And so all schools are now working on essentially recruiting students to their schools.
Okay. Well, Jen, why don't you tell us about what happened today? I know we were talking on the phone briefly earlier today, and you told me a little bit about what you were up to. Tell us what happened today and what you're planning for the rest of this week.
So a quick little bit of background before I talk about today's actions. My charter network is called Chicago International Charter Schools, and it's the charter holder and the first organization that public tax dollars go to essentially for our schools. But they actually claim that they don't employ the people in their schools and that they don't run their schools, and instead they farm management out to charter management organizations. And the charter management organization that runs my school is called CEP, our Civitas Education Partners. So we've been bargaining with CEP since May, so 8 or 9 months. But they are the middle managers. They are actually not the ones in control of what's really happening in our schools or how money is allocated to our schools. And so today we staged an action outside of the Chicago International Charter Schools headquarters downtown in Chicago, demanding that the CEO of that charter holder organization, the organization that holds the purse strings and controls what's really going on, actually come to the table and negotiate with us.
Gotcha. Okay. Mm-hmm. Quinn, what about Oakland? I think you talked a little bit about it, but just run through that one more time. What's next?
Yeah, we are organizing, we are prepping, we are making sure our pickets are ready if we need to strike. We're going from the site, like grassroots, starting from like the teachers, students, teachers, and getting everything ready and prepped. And Friday we are getting a fact-finding report, some fact-finding. And then our executive board and president will be making the decision of whether, when or if we are going to strike. So it could be potentially any day. We have no idea yet what we're going to be doing, but Friday is a big day for us to find out what the fact-finding reports say, and I'm not in saying what we're going to be doing moving forward.
Excellent. So we only have a couple of minutes left, but I'd love to hear from both of you about what support's been like from parents and community. So what does that support looked like for you?
Well, for our strike here in Chicago, we've had students actually join us on the picket line and at some of our actions around the city. So that's been really encouraging to see, and just a testament to real-life education, right? Students learning from their teachers that they should stand up when they see injustice and they can fight for what they think is right. We've also had some parents on the picket lines, and students have, for the most part, stayed home during the strike. At my school, the first day, there was only one student who went to school that day. The schools have remained open, even though there aren't any teachers or paraprofessionals or support staff in them. So to me, that shows that students and parents understand why we're on strike and why we're fighting for better schools. And so they're choosing to stay home and support us while we fight for better working and learning conditions.
Great. And Quinn?
Yeah, actually on Friday, there were thousands of high school students that didn't go to school and rallied down at the district office, which was huge.
Great.
So our students are getting activated. My students, because we've been facing school closure, the Board of Education has created a lot of middle school activists that are loud and proud and ready to go. And so I know that that has been going through other middle schools also, like building and other spaces. They've forced the district at a school board meeting a couple weeks ago. They forced the school board off of the stage and into a restorative justice circle.
I heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah, the harm that's been happening based off of their decisions that they've been making, which was huge. It's, I believe, the second time it's ever happened at a school board meeting. It's actually really a liability for board members to get off the stage when they're not on camera. So it was a huge power, like positional power shift for us.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of our parents are also ready to engage and stand up for their students and for teachers. I've had parents come up to me and be like, we're with you. Like, we know, like, we see you, and we know that, like, we also have to either keep our kids at home or stand on the picket line with you.
Oh, that's excellent. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you both for joining us on KBOO tonight. It was really incredible to hear both of your experiences going on right now across the country, and just hear about teachers, standing up and fighting back for creating the schools that our kids deserve. So thank you both for being here.
Yes, thank you. And know that we are all listening and paying attention.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'd also like to thank our engineer, Rachel. And thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Stephen. This is Rachel Haynes, and you've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 to catch another Labor Radio show. Mm-hmm.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the film screening of Making Waves, Rebirth of the Golden Rule, on Monday, February 11th from 7:30 to 9 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Making Waves, Rebirth of the Golden Rule is an award-winning documentary film. The Golden Rule is the peace boat that promoted the end of nuclear weapons testing in the Marshall Islands. Again, that's the film screening of Making Waves, Rebirth of the Golden Rule, on Monday, February 11th, from 7:30 to 9 p.m. at the Buchan Hall at the First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 29th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films, happening Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, now through Saturday, March 2nd. Most films will show at the Mariarty Arts and Humanities Building, room 104 at PCC Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. Again, that's the 29th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, now through Saturday, March 2nd. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy.